Dr. Gilbert?
What?
Locks for 316. 316 is the... Yeah. Yeah. Evan. See you. Good morning. It's so good to be here. Today's message is called Shamu Rocks. And Shamu is... Shamu Rocks, that's the name of the SeaWorld show that features this particular... this famous killer whale. Last week, our family was on vacation in San Diego, and we caught the Shamu show twice. And so I learned a lot about killer whales. I found out that killer whales are actually, they're predators, actually, and they're at the very top of the aquatic food chain. So they're predators. They have no known predators, people that feed on them. They actually hunt sharks. They hunt other whales, whales bigger than themselves. But at SeaWorld, we didn't witness this 20-foot-long, 10,000-pound lean, mean killing machine. What we got was a 20-foot-long, 10,000-pound, tame, twirling entertainer. That's what we got. And while Shamu was absolutely this thrilling, beautiful, powerful, graceful animal, as I was sitting there watching him, I couldn't help but just think, he was born to be free. He was meant for the ocean. I mean, he's a predator. Shamu was created to rock the seas, not the stadium. And, you know, I think Shamu feels the same way. And the reason I think Shamu feels the same way is this. You know, killer whales, they have a dorsal fin. It's the largest fin that's on the center of their back, right? And in the ocean, in the wild, that fin stands tall, erect. It just slices through ocean currents just with ease. But in captivity, you've probably noticed this before, but killer whales, their dorsal fin slumps over like that. You ever notice that, right? And scientists, they have a name for it. It's called dorsal fin collapse. And scientists, they say they don't know why the dorsal fin collapses. But it's only dolphins in the orca whales in captivity where the dolphin fin collapses. So obviously, what's the difference? It's pretty obvious. The difference is freedom. The difference is freedom. And so I had this thought. I think that that's kind of a picture of how a lot of Christians feel. Because, like, we know we're saved. We know that we have power from the Holy Spirit. We know that we are created by God to do the works of God, Ephesians 2, 9 and 10. To do the will of God, to be a force of redemption and goodness on this earth, right? You've been commissioned by Jesus himself to go and awaken hope in the hardened hearts of people both near and far. Yet, there's a part of you, part of a lot of us, that feels caged. That feels caged. Because rather than living in the freedom of who you're called to be and who you're created to be with all the power of the Holy Spirit, sometimes you feel like you're just doing laps around the pool. Because life is tame. Life is safe in the pool. But there's a restless part of your soul that just wants to kind of just break free and dive into the dangerous currents of destiny and just get caught up in a life of meaning and significance. And I think that for a lot of us, sometimes when we think about this life that we want, the life that God promises us, we feel all of this kind of dissatisfaction kind of coming to the surface. And it can be really frustrating. It can be really frustrating finding that thing that we want to get caught up in. And what I want to encourage you with today is that don't repress that frustration. Don't kind of put it aside in a closet and try to just forget about it and kind of limp along life and say, you know, everything's okay. Because I want you to know that finding that passion is part of the journey in this Christian walk. And instead of kind of putting it away, what I want to encourage you today, this morning, is to lean into that dissatisfaction. Lean into that frustration. Because the very thing that frustrates you today, or the very thing that dissatisfies you today, that may end up being the very catalyst that frees you. That's really good. You can write that down, all right? The very thing that today that dissatisfies, that frustrates or dissatisfies you may end up being the catalyst that actually frees you. And we see examples about this throughout the Bible. One day, Moses, very comfortable guy, prince of Egypt, he was looking over a city, and he saw how this city was being built on the backs of slave labor, his people, an entire people group. Can you just imagine that? An entire ethnicity was in the bondage of slavery, no rights, no future, no hope, and another race was profiting from their labor. And when he saw that, something began stirring inside of Moses' heart. Something just began kind of like fire, it's like embers, just started smoldering there. Something started happening, and he began to be filled with this sense of anger, sense of injustice in what he saw, sense of compassion for his people, and he longed for God's people to be free. And you know what? God felt exactly the same way. God wanted to see those people free too, even more than Moses. And at the right time, he asked Moses to partner with him to free those people, the Israelites, and lead them into the promised land. On another day, at another time, lived a teenager named David, and his life was pretty comfortable. It at least was pretty boring as well. Being the youngest, he was always kind of the last on the list to get everything. And he was just, his greatest skill was counting sheep and composing poems about God. And there was a time in his life where his people, the Israelites, they entered into conflict with a neighboring group of people called the Philistines. And all of his brothers had gone out to battle, but David was left at home to count sheep and to write poems. But one day, David was just, he was just bored. And he said, you know, told his dad, I want to go out to the front lines. I want to see what's happening. I want to see what's going on. I want to be where the action is, because there was something stirring in him. I want to be where the action is. And so as he was approaching the front lines of where the battle was supposed to take place, there was no battle going on, because but what he heard was the taunts of the enemy named Goliath. And it wasn't the insults to his people that made David his blood boil, but it was the accusations leveled against God that David just couldn't stand it anymore. And God felt the same way. And David took a couple of stones, and you know the rest of the story. Long after David, there was another Israelite. He was a captive Israelite named Nehemiah. And even though he was a captive, his life was also pretty tame and pretty comfortable, because he had this distinguished position as the cupbearer in the king's inner circle. But there was something in him. He could have just stayed comfortable, but there was something in him that longed for God, for country, to see the name of Yahweh to be glorified and lifted high again. And it was just simmering in there. And one day he heard a report about Jerusalem, his home city, the place where God, the temple, the place where God dwelt. And the city was being rebuilt, was rebuilt. But the report was that the walls were in ruins. And because of the walls were in ruins, it was just shame upon the people of Israel and a shame upon God. And something, when he heard that, something in him snapped. Something in him said, this is not right. I can't stand. This can't be like this. And so he goes away and he prays this dangerous prayer. And then he goes to the king, the captive king, the king who held Jerusalem hostage. And he says, the city's been rebuilt. Would you allow me to go back to the city and rebuild the walls? A dangerous prayer to ask. And of course, God blessed him. God had favor on his life. Not only did the king give him permission, but the king gave him an army to go with him, gave him all the materials that he needed to rebuild the wall. And he faced all of this opposition, threats to his life every single day, and he completed his task. Long after Nehemiah, there lived a fisherman named Peter. And he gave up that vocation to follow Jesus. And one evening, Peter and disciples were in a boat. And late in the evening, in the early morning, they saw Jesus, or a figure, some kind of ghost or something, they saw walking on them towards water. Everyone on the boat was just white. They were frightened. But something happened in Peter that didn't happen in everyone else. He said, you know, Jesus, if that's you, call me out to come walk on the water. And so Jesus said, yeah, it's me. Come out and walk on the water. And so Jesus did. Jesus did that. And Peter opted to leave the safety, the comfort of the boat for the uncertain waves of the sea. There's something in our journey called what I would call spiritual convergence. And what this is when your passions, the things that stir you, the things that maybe break your heart, when those things begin aligning with God's heart, that is your catalyst. That is your catalyst for growth. That is your catalyst for discovering what you're created to do, what you're created to be. Bill Hybels, he's a pastor, a megachurch pastor at Willow Creek, he calls these moments, these kind of realizations, Popeye moments. And some of you, you know, Popeye cartoons are awesome. Some of you have probably never even seen a Popeye cartoon. I want to just show you the genius of a Popeye cartoon just for a second, okay? So I have a picture. Here's Popeye. At least you've probably seen the figure before. He's Popeye. And so Popeye, he's just this very good-hearted sailor man. And he he's the protagonist. He's a good guy. And everyone loves him except for his enemy, a really brawny guy named Brutus. Okay, next picture. There's Brutus. And Popeye and Brutus, they would regularly fight over the hottest girl on the planet. That would be Olive Oil. Okay. And she's a real looker, right? And Brutus, okay, being bigger and stronger, he would always beat up on Popeye. And then he would kidnap Olive Oil and he would tie him up and so forth. And just when it seems that like all hope was gone, just when it seems that like evil would prevail, that Brutus would win. Excuse me. Just when those things would happen, it's near the end, Popeye would say these electrifying words. That's all I can stand, and I can't stand no more. You remember that? Right? And then he'd rip open that can of spinach, and he'd swallow it down in one big gulp. And then strength would just begin coursing through his body. Then he became this like unstoppable force of good. And then he would rescue Olive Oil, whatever Brutus was doing. And then when then everything calmed down, just at the end of the cartoon, he'd sing this little jig. And just for fun, let's sing it together. Just for fun, just to bring back memories, okay? Remember what he sings at the end, right? He says, I'm strong to the finish, because I eat me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. Isn't that genius? And that happened in every single show. What a show. As you look at your life, and as you look at life, all right, around you, what is it in your life, or as you look out in life, where would you say, man, that's all I can stand, and I can't stand no more? Moses, he couldn't stand slavery. David couldn't stand God's name being dragged in the gutter. Nehemiah couldn't stand the shame that was being heaped on the people of God. Peter couldn't take life in the easy life in the boat. Mother Teresa couldn't stand seeing the poor suffer. Martin Luther King Jr. couldn't stand prejudice and racial inequality. Jesus couldn't stand people being lost and going to hell. God is wholly discontented with this world, with the things in this world, where our world is broken. And where your discontent lines up with God's discontent in congruence, that is your catalyst. That's when you begin discovering, begin unleashing what you were created to be on this earth for. The place in your heart where there's this firestorm for change, for redemption, for goodness, where that lines up with God's heart, that's your catalyst. Maybe it's, you know, communities you hear about, in Africa ravaged by AIDS. Maybe it's individuals sold into slavery. Maybe it's the urban poor. Maybe it's people who have no health care. Maybe it's immigrants and their children struggling to make it. In America, a lot of us, you know, grew up that way. At-risk kids in Dearborn, dysfunctional families, wasted potential, people never hearing about Jesus. Now, this dissatisfaction is not just things outward. Sometimes the dissatisfaction, that's your catalyst that propels you, it's something that's on the inside. For example, for some of you guys, your Popeye moment may come from something that you see in yourself. You see yourself, your impatience gets you in trouble. Greed, lust, bitterness, jealousy, pride, hatred, and hopefully you get to a point. Man, you get to a point where you just say, man, I can't stand myself anymore. I can't stand who I am. I can't stand my sin. I can't stand my mediocrity. You know, I'm labeled a Christian, but my life is just far from it. I can't stand how comfortable and safe I am. man, I want to step out in the boat and I want to start living a life instead of just making a living. And I think it's at this point here where a lot of us can get stuck. And I understand that because this is where I get stalled in my life. This is where the catalyst gets stalled. And that's why this issue is so important. And when I think about someone getting stuck, I think about the rich young ruler. Remember him? He came to Jesus because he wanted more to life. He actually wanted more. He says, I want to experience more. This religion thing, these Ten Commandments, this stuff that I've been doing as far as religion goes, actually, it's not enough. He says, I've been doing all those things. And I want to be challenged more. I want to grow. I want to experience God. I want to go deeper. He was singing all those kind of songs. And he felt caged in his own religion. And he asked Jesus, what more can I do? What more can I do? And so Jesus said, okay, you want to know your next step? Because religion isn't making a lot of difference in your life. Jesus said to him this, go sell all your possessions. Follow me. But we know the story. He got stalled. He just loved his comfort too much. He just put all of his hope, everything inside of his financial security, and he went away sad. And this is where the catalyst gets stalled in my life. And it's probably where it gets stalled in your life as well. We want the better life. We want the real deal. We want the intimacy. We want the relationship. We want the power. We want the purpose. We want the meaning. We want all of that. But we also like the comfort of our current situation. Just think about Shamu, right? I mean, he is in captivity. We know that. But man, he doesn't have to worry about his next meal. He has access to the finest whale health care on planet Earth. He never has to worry about ever being beached or being chased by a crazy Japanese fisherman. You and I, we're going to struggle in the tension between comfort and calling. Comfort and calling. But remember this, because we all struggle with this. But this is what you need to hold on. What you need to remember this is that when Jesus calls and when he beckons you to follow him into the will he has for you, into the destiny he has for you, that is just, it's way better. It's just way, way, way better. You just have to understand, have to begin to grasp and believe that it's just way, way better than your comfort and security. That like your best day in comfort and security is still worse than your worst day in God's will and God's passion in doing what he created you to do. And the rich young ruler, he just couldn't grasp exactly what Jesus was offering him, this call to follow him. Last week, you know, I wasn't here, and congratulations to all our graduates who graduated, and it's a tough time, right? You know, it's congratulations. Here's this really tough, you know, world you got to try to get into. What are the things, you know, when I was, I graduated in like 93 or 94, way back in the day, anyway. It was a similar time, economic time. It was like a kind of like a recession. And the only way that, you know, the majority of people got a job, were able to land a job, was because they had gotten an internship. They got the internship. And you all know how important internships are in college because a lot of you guys look for them. You know, D.C., the D.C. metro area, it's the internship capital of the United States, definitely. Because every year, tens of thousands of young adults, they just flock to D.C. because they're trying to land the right internship with the right person because they know it's going to open up the right doors. If you look at all the Congress people and judges and so forth, you know, you just see just a huge majority of them were once, you know, congressional staffers and, you know, gophers and stuff like that, court clerks and things like that. They got that internship. And so in our economy today, an internship, okay, it's the difference between landing a job or printing out hundreds of resumes. And so, see, with the rich young ruler, you know, it doesn't really matter how much money he had to give up. I don't really care how much money he had to give up. Jesus was offering him something so much more, something greater. This was an opportunity Jesus was offering him of a lifetime to follow him, an internship with the Son of God. Some of you Christians, you should put that on your resume. Internship with the Son of God. I mean, that would look pretty amazing on a resume, right? You can't put a price tag on an internship with the Son of God because I guarantee you it'll open all the right doors. It'll open all the right doors, and it guarantees you, it guarantees you the kind of future that you've just never dreamed about. But the rich young ruler, he said, no. He said, I don't want that. And he went back to swimming laps with Shamu. Now, juxtapose for a moment, okay, the rich young ruler, okay, and then juxtapose with that the 12 untamed disciples. The disciples, what was their life like? They witnessed the deaf hear, the lame walk, the dead live. They were the ones who actually touched, they felt the bread and the fish that multiplied being passed out. They felt the earth shake when Jesus died on the cross. They went and actually saw the empty tomb. They saw him risen and ascend into heaven. And in a day, they didn't have like mass transportation. They didn't have cars. In a day where you lived, you always stayed within, say, 40, 50 miles of that radius. You didn't go anywhere else. These guys took the gospel to the ends of the known ancient world, because they were gripped by this one belief, this belief that no person, that it is a crime, that no person should live or die without being redeemed by their Savior. What is God? Where is God? Where is God calling you to bring redemption into this world? Where is he calling you to bring it? Because he wants you to bring it. That's the where question. But another important question for us is when? When will you start living for what God, for what you were really created to do? In my research on killer whales, you know, I found out that killer whales have a lifespan of 80 years in the wild. 80 years in the wild. But what I found out was that killer whales in captivity, their lifespan is half of that. It's less than half, actually. And that fact, it's so counterintuitive when I read that, right? Because they die prematurely because swimming in the shallow water just wasn't what they're built for. And you would guess that, again, being fed regular meals and access to the cleanest water, whale water, the best whale health care, no stress environment, that they would flourish in that environment. But it's the comfort that kills them. It's the comfort that kills them. Jesus said this, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul? Shamu, man, Shamu rocks. But Shamu was meant, he was built to rock the seas, not the stadium. And church, I want to tell you something. Take this with all your heart. You were meant to rock. You were meant to rock this world. You were meant to bring redemption, goodness, to be a force of God's kingdom, his power, his authority, his healing, his grace to those around you, and take it to the very ends of the earth. And so I just want to leave you with one challenge today. One challenge today. Something to think about, maybe an action to take this week. Okay? Take one uncomfortable step in the direction of your dissatisfaction. Take just one. Because it's a journey, okay? But you got to start somewhere. You got to take one uncomfortable step in the direction of your dissatisfaction. Whatever it is in the world, or maybe it's something in your heart that you just can't stand anymore. Take an uncomfortable step in bringing redemption to that situation. Maybe it means volunteering your time. Maybe it means being a counselor to someone, giving finances. Take a step where maybe it means engaging some aspect of your soul. Take the next step where you become a force of good and goodness against things that you can't stand anymore, because you were built to do that. You were created for that. I'm going to leave you with one last verse. This is one of my life verses, Galatians 5:1. It says, it is for freedom. It is for freedom. Galatians 5:1. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Not to swim in the tanks, right? Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Church, you are free. You are free. You are free to rock this world. In a moment, we're going to take communion together. And communion, it's this just powerful symbolic act instituted by Jesus for us to remember how much he loved this world and loved people, that he doesn't want anyone to perish but have eternal life. And also through that, we're also going to commission our New Life and our Montana team and our China ESL and Tech Vision team. So I'm just going to ask the ushers to come forward. And I also want to ask the our STM teams to come up as well. All right? So if we could have the China team just stand here, and we'll face forward. And we'll have the Vision Tech team stand behind. And we have the Montana team stand over here. That'd be great.